Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
One, two, three. Mr. Matt Brown, what an honor, my brother. Thank you.
No, thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
How's everything going? How's life? We got to talk. There's a coffee company going on, and there's your academy. Tell me everything.
Well, I don't know where to start, man. Everything's just keeping me busy, man. Keeping me on the grind, keeping me on my toes all the time, and just enjoying life, man. Just trying to make the most of everything, and just keep moving onward and upward every day.
Where was this this coffee company idea came from? How did that start? It's going pretty well. I'm gonna buy some here and use it on my podcast to get me jamming here. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man. Grab some. It's the best coffee you ever had. And that's kind of how it started. I had a guy that owned a coffee company, and he was sponsoring me. And I would call him, and just talk to him about coffee. He knew everything about coffee, and I said, "Man, this is the best coffee I've ever had in my life. Like, nice. How do you make it so good?" And he was having some issues with his company, with some trademark issues and licensing, and just kind of silly stuff like that, but the business was going good. And he just brought it up to me one day, maybe instead of fighting about trademark stuff, maybe we'll just
change it all completely.
Yeah. And he got really interested in MMA. I don't know if I just lost you there.
Yeah, there you go. It's probably someone calling, right? It happens all the time. Don't worry.
Yeah. And we just went from there, man. We just took it and ran with it from there. So it's been going good ever since.
That's awesome. And I was telling you, I always thought you were like in New Mexico somehow. You're from Ohio. That's where your school is. Tell us about a little bit of your academy. It's a martial arts academy, right?
Yeah. I mean, not a lot to say about it, really. I mean, it's a gym, and we just try to keep it we try to keep the
I mean, it's more like focusing on regular students, or are you thinking, because I saw you were cornering like a Mickey Gall the other day, and it's that a line you try to get to, like a coaching kind of thing, because this is, you're probably going to be like one of the greatest coaches ever when you retire, because you have like a lot of experience and that not only comes with time, but I think we can see in your style, like you are much calmer, still super aggressive, but a much calmer fighter now. And I think when I saw you with Mick Gall, I was like, this is genius, because not everybody likes to make that switch, right? And not everybody can, because teaching that doesn't mean you being a great fighter doesn't mean you're going to be a great teacher, and you being a great teacher doesn't mean you're going to be a great fighter, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, so going back to the gym, I try to bring the high level accomplishments that I've had and that experience and knowledge, and just, I think the whole purpose of it is that, to inspire others, that they can do, what I've done. Like, I'm not anybody special, even though I guess I probably am in some respects, but, which I've come to find from owning a gym and coaching, right. But, that's kind of the idea, right? So that's how I want to do it with coaching. You know, I've coached a little bit, not a lot, but I've coached a few guys. I've been pretty fairly selective with who I've coached. Mickey's a great guy, and has been around with good friends, and I like coaching those kind of people that you know, work with me and not just me telling them go do this. I try to be more of a player coach, right? So I get in and you know, do the grind right there with them, right along their side, man.
And that brings a different motivation to the guy too, right? Like, hey, I'm telling you what to do. I know how to do it. That's really important too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of things I'll tell them, like, I can't really do this that well, but this is probably what you should do. And I try to, so back to the gym, it's sort of the same thing with the students. Like, I try to explain to them how to do things and be right there on the mats with them doing them the same time that they're doing them. Whether it's a first day person that's in just because they're a fan, or if it's a experienced person that's competing or has been doing it for a long time. You know, I just try to be in there. I just love being on the mats, man. So having my own place where I can bring that energy and bring that inspiration to others is a beautiful thing. And the kids is my favorite part of the whole thing.
That's awesome.
Watching them come in. I don't know how many stories I could tell of kids that I see day one. They come in and their heads are down, or they're scared, or they're nervous, or they're anxious. Maybe got bullied at school, different things like this. A month or two later, their chests are popped out. They're walking around like they're the king of the world and proud to be a part of what we're doing. And
yeah, that's awesome.
And that's the most inspiring thing, man.
That's awesome. We say that a lot with the jiu-jitsu thing, because it's a it just put a little seed in their minds, like, hey, the guy that's making fun of you in school, he's still gonna do it, but it's your choice now not to choke him out or punch him in the face. Now it's just funny, right? It's like, look, I can fuck him up if I want to. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and probably people from the podcast are gonna say, oh shit, he's gonna tell this story again, but you don't know. So she had a kid that was it was a special need kid that was in her after school class, right? So they had like a two or three teachers, and one day, like on a Tuesday, we got a note say, hey, this kid kind of like he was walking by and he kicked her right in her back. And we got the note. I told my wife, I say, look, don't get involved. It's fucking kids being kids. You gotta let them be kids too. It's gonna happen. She probably say something he didn't like. That's how he's gonna let her know he didn't like what she said, and it's never gonna happen again. And then a couple of days later, he slapped her. And then I was like, all right, now we have a problem. So, and she did some jiu-jitsu now with this whole shit that's going all over. We stopped that, but we're coming back. But she did jiu-jitsu at the time. And then I sat down with her and I say, like a grave dad. I was like, look, if that kid come close to you again, you're going to look him in the eye and you're going to tell, like, back off. And if he doesn't, you're going to take him down. You know how to do that from class, right? She was like, yeah. I said, yeah. So you're going to take him down. You're not going to choke him out, but you're going to take him down. You're going to mount, and then you're going to wait for the teacher to come. Don't let him move. And I saw in her eyes, like, it was awesome, because I saw it was the first time she clicked that, oh, shit. Okay. So, like, whatever I do in school, in the mats, I can do out of that too. Like, I can use that against this boy who might come at me again. And then she kind of like, she was looking at me like I could see she got the message. And nothing ever happened after that, but she was okay. Because she didn't want to go back to the, she was like, hey, we kind of like, she's super like happy all the time and excited to go to school. And then she was like, hey, can you pick me up? I don't want to stay after school anymore and stuff like that. We kind of like, oh, we have a problem. And after that, she was like, no, she was fine. And I asked a few days later, say, any problems with the guy? Because I just want to tell her, say, look, you punched me in the fucking face. And my wife goes like this, no, that's not how it works. I was like, so I'm going to go there. I'm going to punch him in the face. She's like, no, don't get involved. We get involved, right? It's our daughters. It's our kids. But yeah, it never happened. And that comes from martial arts, right? It's awesome. It's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a very stand up ish of you, because I would have told him to punch him in the fucking face and be done with it.
Right? Yeah, yeah, right.
It was funny you said that story. My kids have a similar story. They were bullied. One of my kids was bullied one time. That they were only in third grade at the time, and the kid was just pushing them at the as a flag football game. And I was sitting in the car, so I could see the kid kind of messing with them. And it's similar, where the kid was maybe autistic or had a little something, yeah, on, you know, maybe on the spectrum or something. And I seen my kid, my son, just talk to him and told him something. And then the kid walked away, and he come in the car a little bit later. I said, what'd you tell him? He said, well, I just told him if you do that again, I'm going to take you down and put you on your back. I'm going to mount you. And then if you keep fighting, I'm going to break your arm.
That's fucking awesome.
And the kid was like, the kid had no idea, you know, like what to even say or anything. So the kid just walked away. I don't want my fucking arm, bro.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And I had a story too with Leonardo Vieira, the Czech master. Yeah, Leozinho. And he was telling, like, his kid was getting bullied at school. And there was something going on, and the kid just prevented something from happening, right? And then they called him in school, and he said, look, my kid knows how to defend himself. And so if something's going to happen, you're going to have to talk to their parents. I'm okay. Whatever happens, my kid knows how to defend. And they were like, oh, he's not supposed to. He's like, he's not supposed to what, to defend himself? Fuck yeah, he's supposed to defend himself. It's crazy. It's crazy. But it brings that little extra, right? Like your kids, it's like, hey, you're going to do this. You're just going to fucking regret. Don't do it. Wrong guy, wrong kid to mess around with.
Yeah, yeah. And I was lucky it was that kid, because my other one probably would have just elbowed him in his face. And
yeah. It's
yeah, that's a beautiful thing with the kids, man. Like, it gives them that confidence. And I talk a lot about that with the kids. Like, I'm not as much about anti-bullying as I am. I like to be more proactive. Like,
yeah,
anti-bullying means someone's bullying you, and then you have to do something back. So what I promote more is you're going to walk around proud with your head up, and no one's going to want to mess with you.
Yes.
You're going to be proactive about it, and you're going to be confident and strong, and the kid's just not going to, they're going to see you're not the guy to mess with.
That's it. It's a different time too, right? Because like our times, like we the same age, when our high school time, there was always bully, and it was cool. Like, you get bullied, you bully back. But today it's a fucking like, oh, don't say this, don't say that. So, and if you go past the bullying part, that's when we fight. But nowadays it's just, there's like all this social media and the keyboard warriors at school too, right? Because they're not going to do shit in school. And then they come back and they go on Facebook Messenger or whatever those kids, because it's happening. Or like our kids on Facebook Messenger with friends, and then you see like, hey, this girl, because my daughter goes like, hey, she doesn't get involved, but she's like, hey, today that we have a little group, and this girl was talking shit to that girl. I was like, all right, so you out of the group, because I don't want you to be part of that. I don't want you doing to anyone, and I don't want anyone to do it to you, because I'm not going to control myself. It's like, that's not how I work. So yeah, I was just gonna tell her, say, no, you're a good day, fucking beat her up. And then my wife is mad. She's like, don't tell her to do that. I was like, shit.
Nah, fights a part of childhood, right?
Yeah.
It's a standard normal part, man. And you know, there's gotta be a hierarchy, right?
Yeah, at some point, yeah. That's our time, right? Like that it was like that. You know, there was a kid you go fuck around with. There's a kid you don't. And you got to know that, too.
I mean, I think most of us went through something. And, like, I got bullied a decent amount. And, you know, I would fight back every time.
Yeah.
And I got my ass kicked sometimes for more times than not. When I was a kid, I got my ass kicked. Because I was getting bullied by the bigger kids. But I learned, or, you know, they learned that if they're going to bully me, there's going to be a fight, even if they win.
Yes. Yes, that's it. That's it.
And they didn't like that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't like you, but it was I was knowing early, just before my high school, because my first fight, it was with a kid with a broken arm. He had fucking, but he wanted to fight so bad. Like, he was pushing me. He was trying to punch me with the cast in his arm and shit. And I went there and fucking kind of like kick his ass. And then people were like, oh, you were that guy who beat the guy with a broken arm. So that's kind of what, what I was like, all right, so I'm sorry. Not a good merit to be known by. Look, how did you get, and that's some of that stuff we're going to talk about. You probably said a million times, but I just want people from Brazil that to know how did you start in martial arts and fighting, yeah. How that journey until you get to the UFC?
Well, I literally just went and signed up one day. I had never trained or anything. And I just went there. That was back in the days when there wasn't commissions and wasn't sanctioned or nothing. And I just signed up. That was the start. And then I won the first couple of times. So I thought I was a real tough guy.
What were you training before?
No, it was nothing. I didn't train at all. Like I said, I won a couple of times, so I thought I was a tough guy. I was like, dude, this is easy, you know? And then finally I did get my ass kicked, and I decided, you know, like a really technical guy, like a guy, he beat me with technique and power, everything, just beat the living hell out of me. So I decided
that type of wake up call, he says, shit, I'm never going to beat this guy. Right. Like, yeah,
that's how I felt at the time. Yeah. I'd beat him now though, but,
for sure.
But it got me to go to a gym, you know? So I finally went to a gym, and then I really got my ass kicked when I went to the gym, because now I'm getting beat up in jiu-jitsu, I'm getting beat up in wrestling, I'm getting beat up in Muay Thai and boxing. And but I was fortunate that the first gym I went to was really good pros, and they were very helpful. And I seen that they were actually like right on the cusp of getting in the UFC. And
nice.
They never did make it, but they were right there. They probably should have made it. And yeah, so that just kind of inspired me, and it got me to stop drinking, stop partying, stop doing the drugs and stuff, and got me driven to do something productive with my life. And I remember that, you know, the first day I went in there, I said, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to pursue this, or I'm going to die trying. This is what I want to do with my life.
Nice. That's very nice. There's one, it's not a cool fact, but it's a curiosity. I moved to the United States in 2004. And a few months back, it was that concert where the former guitar player from Pantera got shot. You were at that concert, right?
Yes.
That's great. I was reading that, and I just saw a fact, because I remember so clearly that, and that's people kind of know you because of the it's not heavy metal, it's like a,
it's heavy metal. Yeah.
It's heavy metal for us. It's it was always heavy. Now there's like all different names, but
group metal.
That's from like your teen years. You always like that type of songs and concerts and that kind. Because I can see like you were saying now, like you would just go and sign up for a fight, and that's kind of how you are, like get into fights and parties and rock. When you say like the parties and fights and stuff, it just brings me the rock concerts, the old style, the old fashioned way to go to rock concerts.
Yeah, I used to love it, man, when I was a kid. Now I'm the guy sitting back in the corner and chilling and actually watching the show and enjoying it. But yeah, the Pantera was actually my first concert on the Reinventing the Steel tour. It was Soulfly, Morbid Angel, and Pantera. Pantera headlined, and it was their last tour. Nice. That they ever did. And then, of course, I went to the Dimebag show with Damage Plan, and it was one of the craziest days of my life. And Yeah, but I've always been in that shit, man.
Nice. Look, we're gonna do a fight to fight. That I can explain to you a little bit. I'm gonna get a. We're not gonna do all of it because we're gonna be here all night. But I'll do a good selection of fights, and you tell me something that comes to your mind about that one specific fight. Okay,
Go
we're gonna
for it.
do
I love
some
it.
wins and we're gonna do some losses too, because I think your career, it's just not about winning and losing. You always there, super high level, just like your last fight with Diego Lima. It was freaking something beautiful to see. So,
Thanks.
and a big fan of Carlos Condit too, but you won that fight, I think.
Is what
But
it is.
it happens, right? Yeah. So, Ultimate Fighter finale. That's when you win the Ultimate Fighter, right? Like Matt Arroyo. What comes in your mind on that fight?
The first thing that pops in my head when I think about that fight is he's a grappler, obviously. I fought him before on 24 hours notice was the first time that I fought him. To be fair, he had to make weight and I didn't. So that was because I fought on 24 hours notice. I took the fight at the weigh-ins and he was already on weight. His opponent pulled out, et cetera, et cetera. But I know he's a grappler. So all I basically just trained a lot of takedown defense and jiu-jitsu. And then within the first, I don't know, 30 seconds of fight, he come out and hit me with one of the hardest right hands I've ever been hit with
Shit.
because I was just completely not thinking about it, or I expected him to just come out and shoot right away, like he did in the first fight, and he cracked the shit out of me, and that's I had a big black eye, and it rocked me really good actually. So he had his chance right there and didn't take it. He went for the takedown right after that.
And so after that, it's like is it like a thing like the dream come true kind of thing? It's like I'm in the UFC. That was I can only imagine that's always the goal, right? Because you want to be at the highest level, right? That's yeah.
To be honest, I don't remember there much after that. I mean, obviously it felt good and everything, but don't know. I mean, I kind of, if you see most of my wins, like I don't get too overly excited about it, you know, like I do a whole training camp and everything, and I plan on winning,
Yeah.
you know, so I don't know why to get so excited. Like that's what I came there to do. That's what the plan was. I didn't have any expectation of anything different.
That's awesome. Then let's we're gonna do the UFC 105. Jesus Christ, that's 2009 in England. You won against James Wilkins.
Yeah. Man, the first thing I think about when think about that fight was the jet lag. You know, I flew over, you know, 4 days early, like we normally do. Cut the weight, came off real good and everything. And I remember it didn't really kick in until fight day. I felt good all week. And then fight day, the jet lag kicked in hardcore. I remember not sleeping all night, and just feeling like complete garbage. And I remember walking out to the fight, my legs shaking underneath me, just scared out of my mind. You know, I just flew over here and across the world, and I'm about to get my ass kicked because I'm fucking jet lagged and I
Holy
can't barely
shit.
lift my legs up. And then put on I think I put on a pretty good performance. You know, I think I guess I just woke up and things started clicking, man. So
That's crazy. How is
yeah.
the it's like I mean over there you're just starting, right? So but now how is the your mind going to a fight? Like because you can never avoid to think like that, right? Like I have a bunch of friends fighters and stuff like that. And we always like talk like very carefully and say, look, what about like this is a shitty fight for you, kind of, but you don't want to say that because the mind plays so much tricks on you, right? How do you like now overcome all of that? It's a lot easier, I can only imagine, right? Like it's just another fucking day. kind of thing.
I don't like to think of it as just another day. I know a lot of people kind of get into that. They're like, ah, it's just like sparring. And you know what? It's not like sparring. Like, the dude's trying to take your fucking head off, you know? Like, yeah. He's trying to kill you. He's willing to die out there. Nobody's, for the most part, nobody's willing to die in sparring, right? Like,
that's right. That's true.
And, you know, and it's the most important day. So I don't like to think of it like that. It is a bigger thing. It is more important because I have kind of went in with that mentality before and I was overly relaxed. It's like, that's just sparring, you know? And then I'm kind of chilled and he's over here trying to fucking kill me. And I'm like, why are you doing that? I thought we were just sparring, right? So, of course, we have negative thoughts consistently, but I think the way that we overcome that is through habit. So that has to start months before the fight. And that's when negative thoughts come into your head. You have to figure out a system, which is the way I do is pretty simple, but not easy. And I literally just sometimes say to myself either out loud or in my head, I just say, stop. I mean, it's, like I said, it's really simple. I just say stop and then change it to a positive thought.
Okay.
And again, it's pretty simple, but, it's not easy, you know? And then I also write down positive affirmations before the fight. That I continually practice before the competition so that they're so ingrained in my head that the night of the fight, I don't have to like read them anymore. They're just already in my head. So I just say them over and over. And then I'll also list out specific reasons why I deserve to win or how I've earned the win. You know, remind yourself usually like the week of the fight, like you write it down, what you have done up to this point, how hard you've trained, right? So you just write those things down and then it becomes even deeper into your mind.
Yeah, that's cool because like all of you guys, like you guys are really good at like analyzing fights and checking fights. That's what you do, right? That's your profession. You're a professional, literally a professional at that. And there's some fights there, especially like way back, right? I'm not gonna say now, but you're watching that guy that you're gonna fight. It's like, oh shit, I'm in for a fucking beating here, right? Because it's like, hey, either this guy, and that's the part where I want to try to understand, like, how do you get the shit out of your mind, right? It's like, because at some point you're looking at a guy, you say, shit, this guy's better than me.
Well, that's easy to do, and that's where you have to be very disassociated. And I've made this mistake many times in the past. I would actually, exactly what you're talking about, I would attribute the majority of my losses to that exact mentality, and that's focusing on my opponent and looking at his name or what he's accomplished and things like that, and letting that get into your head. And then what I at least make an effort to do, whether I accomplish it or not. Now I don't look at their name. I look at them as a human with two arms, two legs,
yeah,
and they bleed the same as me. And look at it almost like a robot. Like, okay, what does this robot do that I need to deconstruct what he does? You know, I don't need to have a name to him. I don't need to think about his accomplishments or anything like that. I just think if it's a human being that accomplishes or just performs these specific actions, deconstruct that. And from there, forget about it. So you do that at the beginning of camp, and then you forget about it. And you know, again, it's all about writing it down, having a plan and strategy. So write down, okay, this is what he does. So now he's just a few blips on a piece of paper.
And just a guy with a bad wrestling or a bad left hook, yes, or something like that you can explore. Right? Yes. That's awesome.
Yes. That's awesome. So now it's written down on a piece of paper. So now in training, you can say, okay, now how do I beat this? You know, on a piece of paper, uh-huh, you know, this, how do I beat this piece of paper rather than how do I beat that person?
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, you just implement that into the drilling and then it becomes really about you and not about him.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that I think has changed for me and made me a better fighter is the focus on myself rather than on who's standing across the cage from me.
Even if you lose, it's better, right? Because you're like, shit, what did I do wrong?
Exactly.
That I let that happen, right?
Exactly. It's yeah. It's all about yourself. It's a 1,000% what's in your control, which is what you do.
That's awesome. That's awesome, and I love that. Then you fought. You fought Ricardo Almeida. You remember that? I'm just gonna say Ricardo Almeida because I know him. My trainer Hans is here, and I know Ricardo for a long time, and I it just comes to my mind like, shit, Ricardo Almeida, and that reminds us how long it's been in the game too, right?
Yeah. That's a good one because that was specifically a fight what we were just talking about where I was so involved with like who he was and what he had accomplished. You know, I watched him back in Pride and Pancrase and, you know, these, you know, I looked up to him so, or Abu Dhabi. I mean, I don't know Dhabi, if you yeah. Pancrase, Abu Dhabi, and I looked up to him so much, and then standing across the cage from him, I couldn't believe I was standing across from Ricardo Almeida.
Shit.
And that really, to be honest, I didn't even realize it at the time how much of a problem that was. So I hadn't done that self-exploration until later and realized how big of a problem that was. And so that's sort of the biggest thing I remember from that fight, just looking across like, damn, this is, you know, a real legend right here. This is a true pioneer icon of the sport. And in my head, I didn't feel significant enough to be in there with them.
And that there's different sense of because like I remember talking to Renato Moicano and he was telling me about when he fought Aldo. He say, shit, I looked across the kid and that was fucking Jose Aldo. Especially for that guy, he grew up from Brazil watching the guy, right? But that it's with Ricardo Almeida, he's not the 10-year unbeaten champ or anything. It's just that like that martial artist kind of like, yeah, shit, it's Ricardo fucking Almeida, right? Yeah, I get exactly what you say. Because people are going to say like, shit, come on, he was never like that good of a striker. No, it's fucking Ricardo Almeida, like a ADCC champ and fought Pride. You just respect the guy for his legacy kind of thing, right?
Yeah, for sure. And there's a little bit of other backstory behind that fight too that maybe affected me a little bit, but we don't really need to worry about that. But like I'd trained with him before and different things, so I kind of knew.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I kind of knew how good he was, and again, I let that shit get into me on the inside. And again, years later, learning all this, now I can look back and say, okay, that was certainly a problem, and but it's not a matter of whether it was a problem. It's a matter of whether you fix the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have the fight with John Howard in it was UFC Congo versus Barry in June 2011.
Yeah,
you remember your fights really well, like all of them, or is that's something that gets a little more foggy because it's been a while.
No, I remember him pretty well, to be honest. That's why this is a cool little piece you got going here, because there is little things I remember about each one, but not all of them.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want a recap of the fight. It's just like, what do you remember from that fight? Like, you could say, look, I remember he was all sweaty and stinky, and I didn't want to get close to him. There's a bunch of shit, like whatever comes to your mind.
A couple of things with that one. So I was supposed to, he was a replacement about 5-6 weeks out, I think. You know, he still had a full training camp and everything, but my original fight was way easier than him, is what I remember. I can't remember who it was, but when they told me, yeah, replace him with John Howard, I was like, holy shit, like, this guy's fucking way tougher than, or John Howard's way tougher than the guy I was supposed to fight, right? I gotta fucking, kick it to another gear or something, right? And, you know, I was pretty excited for that fight. And the one thing I remember mostly about the fight is that dude was one of the strongest guys I've ever felt in the octagon. Hit so fucking hard. It was. I remember blocking some shots with my forearms and feeling it go through. And I was like, damn, this guy, I got to really watch out. But I probably felt more in the zone in that fight than I had in any previous UFC fight. I really got in my zone in that fight, and I think it showed in my performance.
Oh, wow. Wow. He's still going. He's on, I think he's fighting for a PFL. I watched him either a few months back, and now he was the last season. But I remember, he's from Boston too, I think.
Yep, he is.
Then we go Chris Cope on UFC 143 in February 2012.
Yeah, so that guy, he was kind of an annoying guy, right? Like, he was always doing the woos, and I remember, like, I hit him one time, and he did the woo, and I just remember, like, dude, I'm going to fuck you up for that shit. Like, you are not doing that shit to me, man. And
I'm going to show you the fucking woo.
yeah. Then the next time I hit him, it cracked him pretty good and finished him. So.
Yeah. Let me know how that worked out for you.
Yeah, like, that shit was so annoying, man.
So what do you mean woo? Like, you were punching, he's like, woo, kind of thing, like that?
Yeah. Like, he did, like, the wrestler. What was the wrestler, Ric Flair or something that used to do that stuff?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know wrestling that okay. well. But it was, he was copying one of the WWF guys.
Then we go with Stephen Thompson on UFC 145.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind with that fight was all the build up to the fight first, because he was obviously, just so hyped up. And
this Lyoto Machida twin brother lost somewhere in time, right?
Yeah. And, you know, he just destroyed everybody he fought before that. There's a little backstory too. So his academy that his dad owns North Carolina,
uh-huh,
was right down the street from my cousin's academy. So they had like a 15, 20 year kind of small little war going on between each other.
Right?
Yeah. And so that made it, you know, even a little bit more personal. And so the buildup, though, I had his fans sending me tweets all the time, these direct messages. Like,
he's, you hear your cousin on the corner just waving at them? It's like, hey, what's up? That'd be pretty dope, right?
Yeah. I mean, these guys were ruthless, man. They were talking shit about my family. They were talking shit to me.
Like the people from the school
I don't know if
like the fans, the fans, right?
Yeah, just these fans that were of him. They're like, he's gonna fuck you up. But I knew all along, and I said it to him long before the fight. I said, Muay Thai is gonna beat karate 9 out of 10 times. Like, you're gonna have a hard road here, because I'm good at Muay Thai and you're good at karate, and those elbows are gonna get through eventually, and they did. But anyway, so we had the fight and everything, and you know, I beat the shit out of him. Really tough fight, really, really hard fight. He was better than I even expected. Made a really, really hard fight. But then afterward, I talked to him a little bit. I thought everything was cool, but we ended up both going to the hospital together, because he actually about halfway knocked me out during the fight. I was kind of out on my feet. I remember seeing stars and kind of losing consciousness for a second while on my feet, and then I woke up and I'm still fighting, and I just threw a punch, like, okay, well, if I'm still here, I gotta throw something, you know. I think it just completely winged and missed, you know, but I was like, I just gotta throw something just in case he's around, right? And so we both had to go to the hospital after, and we were talking a little bit, and I go, hey, you guys, we only have one ambulance here. Does one of you want to wait, or do you guys both want to just go in the ambulance together? So we went in the ambulance together. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, no problem. But then on the way to the fucking hospital, his dad starts talking about a rematch, like
in the ambulance.
Yeah. And I just told his dad, I was like, look, I was like, we can fucking finish it right here. I was like, you want to talk about a rematch? Like, we can rematch right now, buddy. And he kind of quieted down after that.
Yeah, no shit, right? This is so awesome. It's just like, you're like that no nonsense guy at all. It's like a rematch. Well, we fucking here now. Let's just do it.
Yeah, like we're in a closed space. So let's go. No one's gonna break us up in the ambulance.
This is awesome. All right, then we have Luis Ramos in June 2012. Mm. That was pretty quick turnaround too, right? Yeah, it was like 2 months from the Stephen Thompson fight.
Oh, wow, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love fighting, man. You know what I remember about Ramos was he blew me away with how strong he was. Another guy that was just... You know, back then, that was before USADA, you know, and
yeah, that's an important note.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he had a little bit of help because that dude grabbed me and I was like, what the fuck? Like, how are you this strong at this weight, buddy? And but he was clearly one of those guys that used that strength and to his advantage, which doesn't last into the second and third round.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, there wasn't a whole, that's probably one of my less memorable fights in terms of what I remember in my mind.
Then we have a win against and then you stop me because I'm gonna roll up to Eric Silva. We have a win against Mike Swick, I think, mm-hmm. in December 2012. Then we have Jordan Mang in April 2013, Mike Pyle in August. Oh, that's my birthday, August 17, 2013. Then you fought like a Brazilian sensation that they were trying to sell to us, at least. Like, this guy is going to be the next Brazilian superstar, Eric Silva. I think he's pretty much retired now. He has a contract with Bellator, but I don't think this guy wants to fight anymore. I don't. We kind of know, but we don't talk about it. It's like, I don't know what happened to him. Yeah. But what do you remember? Like Eric Silva in. It's your main event, actually, right? Like Brown versus Mike Brown versus Eric Silva. That's how hyped up that kid was, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was sort of the. Whoever won that fight was going to go on to a contender fight, which is exactly what happened. And. Yeah, he was very hyped up. It's funny. So I had watched Eric Silva long before he was in the UFC. I think I just randomly came across a YouTube highlight or something. And I was like, damn, that's a bad motherfucker right there. That back in the jungle fighting, you know, he was just smashing people. And like I said, all the hype was real, you know. And that fight was in not my hometown, but close to my hometown. So I had more family there than I had at my family reunion, and it was just a packed house. All the so I was just embracing the moment, man. There was finally a main event for me. Everything I'd worked for my whole life was finally coming there, and it just felt so good, man. I've always performed better, and the higher, the more pressure on me, the higher the stakes, the better I perform, and.
You get that feeling like I made it kind of feeling. You see your fucking like I said, like it's your main event kind of thing. Like do you like I made it? It's not in a cocky way. It's just like holy shit. Like look back and say I'm fucking here. Like it's I'm the main event. Kind of like do you kind of tap yourself in the back about that at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. I've always. Believe that it should be bigger and better than what it is, you know. That fight again. I'm in my hometown, close to my hometown. There's billboards everywhere for me that I'm seeing myself on. The UFC has me doing tons of media because, you know, he's Brazilian, so he's not doing as much media as me. They got me going to all the TV stations. They got me visiting with the Bengals. They got me doing this and that. You know, my schedule was crazy. I never once, it never crossed my mind that I made it. I thought this is the beginning of more. This That's isn't awesome. Big enough yet. I should be sold out at Madison Square Garden right now. I should be doing media for that. Should be Dallas Cowboys Stadium. That's what it should be. Yeah, that's where I should awesome. Be. And that's you know, just my mind. If it was at Dallas Cowboys Stadium, I would have said this should be a soccer stadium with
like a Wembley Stadium, kind of like yeah.
Yeah, it should be 200,000 people. It should be 300,000, and that's just the way my mind works. It's never big enough. It's never good enough. And so that one, yeah, I never had that feeling at all, man. And I just felt like that's where I belong. For that fight, man, I had the best training camp I ever had. Everything just from beginning to end just worked out perfectly all the way until about 2 weeks before the fight. I threw my back out pretty bad.
Oh, shit.
And I tell you what, it worked out perfect, though, because my weight was already on point. I was feeling great. And normally I would have probably, with all the energy, I probably would have kept grinding those last 2 weeks and might have overtrained myself. The back injury slowed me down. Okay. I healed it up in the last 2 weeks, just rested it. And it taught me a lesson, you know, that I could take those last 2 to 3 weeks off. When you have, I mean, it was a, you know, 15, 16 week camp, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I was, you know, so I'd been grinding for a long time. But that was the only injury I had the whole time. And that showed me, like, you know, once you're in that good of shape, man, it's not going to fall off that quick. So it was a blessing in disguise. So I went into the fight fresh. My back was healed up. I felt great. I was so excited just to get in there and fight. And I was just feeling the energy, man. I was feeling the energy from the crowd. And I knew that that was my night. I knew that everything had come into place and there was nothing that was going to stop me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then you got your that was actually your third bonus, right? I skipped right through the first two ones against Jordan Mayne, which was fight of the night. Then the Mike Pyle fight, it was knockout of the night. And then Eric Silva was performance of the night and fight of the night.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
like a double bonus. That feels good.
Yeah, it was a good little time, man. And, you know, we're still going, so.
So then you go to the Robbie Lawler fight, which was like a title eliminator, right? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
What was going on there? I'm reading here. I don't remember that that you didn't make the weight, but it was a fucking fight of the night. So
So the weight was that's a kind of an interesting story, I guess. So. I was going around and I had a little bit of stress, maybe would have made a little bit of problems. Like this one coach that I had back then was just a fucking aggravation. It just just being a problem the whole week. Well, anyway, it didn't matter. I was like,
I think I remember that. That was like it was with you. Like there was like some kind of commotion, Or like a fighting or something on fight week or something. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was the same coach when I fought Damian Maia later. He punched me after the fight.
Oh, so that's what, okay.
Yeah, so this was the same coach, right? So he was causing all these problems. And I think it might have had little something to do with like the stress levels that I was dealing with coming into the weight cut. But it's no excuse. Anyway. I actually just ran out of time for cutting weight. I called the UFC and I said, look, I just need like another 30 minutes. I think I was only a half pound over, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
I might have been a pound at most.
Yeah, it's 172 and a half.
Okay, a pound and a half.
Yeah.
And I just called him. I said, look, I just need like, you know, another 30, 45 minutes. And they said, no, like the weigh-in is at this time. And if you don't make weight at that time, then you'll have an hour after that to make the weight. So I said, okay, well, you know, I guess I have to show up then, right? Like, so, you know, they just didn't let me finish cutting the weight. And so get to the weigh-in and everything. And then in the back, Right after I step off the scale, you know, I'm getting ready to go cut the weight. I'm like, I got an extra pound. I thought it was a half pound, but maybe that's correct. Okay, I got to go run this off real quick. Well, anyway, some doctor comes over and he goes, no, you can't cut that weight. Like I see the way you look right now. Like, you know, you're not cutting this weight. So I said, well, okay, well, you know, I don't want to give up 20% of my purse either. Like, yeah. I'll just go cut the fucking weight. He's like, there's no way you're cutting that weight. He said, you need water right now. So I went and got some water and started drinking water. Well, Dana comes over about, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes later. And he goes, hey, did some guy tell you guys not to cut the weight? Because someone else missed weight too, a girl, I think.
And
this guy told her the same thing, and he goes, did somebody tell you guys not to cut the weight? And I was like, yeah, you know, some doctor. He goes, that guy's not a fucking doctor. He's not a fucking commissioner or nothing. We don't know who the fuck he is.
Shit.
Right. So anyway, we got to talk with Dana, and he's like, look, he's like, you guys, me and whoever else it was. He said, look, I know you guys have never missed weight before. If your opponents will keep the fight, we're not even going to worry about it. Didn't charge me my 20% and just went on about our way. So that was pretty interesting.
That funny, is really crazy.
Boring. Yeah. So this is just some fucking random guy just comes up and tells us not to cut weight. And it worked out great for me because I really didn't want to cut the weight, you know. But
yeah, it's especially that last pound, right? It sucks. Yeah, I hear.
Yeah, but I would have got it done. Like, I've never missed weight in my life, and like I said, I just mistimed that one. So, you know, it works out fine either way. But then, you know, we finally get to the fight, and you know, what a great fight, man! Lawler's a fucking warrior, and this is the one thing I remember about this fight. Well, I learned a huge lesson in this fight about the levels in MMA. He's the first person in my life I ever fought where I punched him, and I punched him hard, and I rocked him, and I hurt him, and he responded properly. He responded like a warrior. You know, he responded with either throwing back or being comfortable with being hurt like that.
Holy,
you know,
shit.
He kept blocking. He kept his composure. He kept his eyes on me. He kept moving. And I'd never fought anyone in my life before that where I hit them that hard and they continued fighting like a warrior.
Wow.
Yeah, everybody else I ever fought before, when I hit them that hard, it was close. It was the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Or they would have just went down. And that really threw me off just because, you know, I hit him with some really good shots a couple of times. And, you know, he was rocked. I mean, you can watch the fight. You can see clearly, like, he's rocked and he's hurt. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, this dude is he's just going to stand here? Like, he's just gonna,
and that's what you say about levels, right? Like, you reached that championship level.
Yes.
And it was so funny you say that because something that really it got stuck to me was I was doing a show with Darren Till. And he was like, look, I'm not fucking shitting on the guys that are out of the top 10 or anything like that. But like, you're in that top 10 and then you go into that top 5. It's a different fucking planet.
It is.
Right? It's like everybody's tough. Don't get me wrong. The fucking great fighters. But you get into that top 10, top 5. Say, it's a different level. You never see anything like that.
Yeah, particularly when you're with those guys like a Lawler or... you know, the champions, you know, that are not only in the top 10, but have been tested in the top 10.
Yes. And
you know, they're solid, top 10, regular top 10 guys where, you know, they didn't just make an appearance and then fall off or something. But, you know, the guys like that have been through the grind, have been former champions and, you know, it is totally a different level that is, I personally wasn't prepared for it as I thought I would be.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, I can only imagine. Look, I'm not a fighter. I never pretend to be one, but I can only imagine. Like you're saying, like to hear a guy like you saying, it kind of fucking throws me off because you punching with something that you're so used to. It's like you know that punch, right? It's like I said, you would knock out like 9 out of 10 guys. Yeah. And the guy's still there looking at you and say, oh, all right, so what's next? I say, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, guys are in sparring with 16-ounce gloves on would go down. Or and then he's not only just standing there still, but he's still moving, still aware, still ready to keep fighting, and ready for the next series, ready for the next exchange. And,
what do you think of this fight with Nick Diaz that's coming?
Man, that's an exciting fight to watch. Yeah, I think it's hard to say where either one of them are at this point in their career. So I think it's hard to make any predictions as to what'll go on. But that's certainly exciting, man.
I put my prediction was Lawler by decision kind of thing. Okay. I was like, hey, Nick, it's a warrior, right? Like, but he's 5 years out. He's not like that guy that's grinding in the gym for 5 years that he's not fighting. He's not training like 2 times a day. So look, he runs, he does his marathon thing. So he's in shape. He's always in great shape. But it's not fighting shape, so that's why I give it a Lawler for now.
Yeah, that's probably a good pick. Again, I just think with where they're at in their careers, which you talk about Nick Diaz, you know, only fighting once in 5 years, and Lawler's certainly not as active as he was, and certainly hasn't looked as good in his past performances as he did in the past, and it doesn't appear that he has the same energy that he used to have where you'd hit him and he would just throw down. It seemed like the Condit fight was the last time that he really had that. And, if he can bring that fire to this fight, then I'm with you. He probably can find a way to at least get a decision. But maybe, again, you know, maybe that 5 years was good for Nick too. I mean,
he could. And that's what's beautiful about the MMA game, right? Like, if you knew what was going to happen, it was not going to be fun. So
for sure.
Right. Then you go into a Johnny Hendricks fight, and then like we're talking top of the top for like two straight fights, right? Because you fought Johnny Hendricks right after he fought Rob Lawler for the rematch. And he was in a different level too. I had a George St. Pierre here. He said he swear to God he was on something. He said that guy could never stop, and he was crazy. And then like right after that, that's when Uzada came in, right?
That was actually, if I might, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that was the last card before Uzada was implemented.
And, yes,
and it was very clear when I fought Johnny. I've said it a million times. He was on juice. There's no possible way he wasn't. And I know people within his camp at the time that, confirmed that he was on some shit.
Yeah, and I think on his case, it was kind of a clear because his performance went down so much. It's like it's a different guy, like a different fighter, right? Like a different – he went from like a great fighter to like a top 30 fighter. He would never make it like a top 10. It was a crazy, crazy difference to see.
Yeah, and it was a boring fight. I mean, he was able to out wrestle me and hold me down, but I hurt him worse in the fight than he hurt me. It just wasn't he got fucking out wrestled, you know, good for him, but muscles and strength go a long way in wrestling.
That's true. That's true. Then you go a win against Team Means in July 2015.
Yeah, that was an awesome fight, man. I think Tim is awesome. He was never cool to me before the fight or after the fight, but I think he's fucking awesome, man. And I actually have a lot of respect for him. And I didn't really respect him much before the fight, but after I fought him, I thought, man, that's another guy that's really at that level where, you know, I hit him a few times and was like, holy shit, man, like this dude is a fucking killer. But I said, I've been through the Lawler fight and kind of learned that lesson, you know, and Tim is at that level. And he was the first guy I remember really in any fight up to that point where he came right after me and didn't give a fuck. I mean, he came right after me and started throwing down. There was no feel out period. There was no gauging the distance or anything like that. And he was winging elbows at me. And, and I was just able to catch an elbow on him before he was able to catch one on me. And he probably did hit me with one or two, but you know, that was when he really got me fired up. He's throwing some elbows, and I was like, "You want to play the fucking elbow game? Let's go, bro!" And winged one at him, and hurt him pretty good. But man, he's a real fucking warrior. He's a real savage, man, and I love watching him fight to this day.
Yeah, he's still going good. He's still going strong. Then we do that card in Brazil. I think that's where Verdun lost for, yes, that was in Curitiba, Brazil. I think that's where the Verdun lost the war. Yes. For the, yep. to Miocic, right? Yep.
Yep.
So you fought Demian Maia in Brazil. I remember that fight. I'm just gonna bring it up because it's Damian and yeah. He was in Brazil and but we'll keep moving after that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, look, I don't have to take any shame in my losses. I can talk about all of them, man. Like,
plus you fought Damian Maia too. It's like it's not like you're fighting me. <It's all>
right. yeah, right. But you know, again, Damian's another one of those guys I just have so much respect for. Had respect for him before the fight and after the fight, and that was I loved it, man. I loved the whole experience going down to Brazil. The crowd was so fucking hostile to me the whole time.
What? Yeah. They're not really. Look, if you go out of the place and just walk on the streets, they see you. They're gonna come by and hug you and take pictures.
Oh, they all did. That was the funny part. Like, I was like a little nervous to walk out in the street, and I have some friends. Fortunately enough, they live right next to the hotel. I mean, they walk to the hotel. They live right there in Curitiba. And, you know, they tell me, come outside. I'm like, dude, I don't know if I can. And they're like, nah, man, you'll be fine. I come out and everybody shake my hand. And, they love me, ask for autograph and everything. But as a group, when they get together in the crowd.
Ooh, like, vai morrer.
Yeah. And, you know, it was cool, man. You know, made for a good show. And it made it a little bit more exciting for me and kept it a little bit of fun. So we had a great time. And and that was the fight where. That former coach we were referring to earlier,
yes,
sucker punched me after the fight. So I'm sitting there the Sunday after the fight. He comes up. I'm drinking a cup of coffee, and he comes up behind me and punches me in the back of the head. And, you know, at first I think, oh, man, these fans are fucking vicious. Like, what the fuck, right? And I turn around and I see him running away, you know, this, and I recognized him. I was like, what the fuck? And I always give props to Reed Harris, man, the vice president of UFC. And he was, I think he's, you know, 60 something years old. And he was the first guy up and chasing him down, man. And he chased him.
Shit.
Yeah. Like he's a gangster, man. He's a straight G. I have much respect for him. Runs out, chased him outside. And there's a video on YouTube. If you YouTube Rodrigo Bati is his name.
Okay.
You can see what happened down the street when he got the living shit beat out of him.
I'm gonna look for it, and
that was a friend of mine who handled that assault for me, because I come outside you know, because I'm chasing him down too, right? And I come outside the hotel, and there's a huge group of fans right there, and they start, like, you know, grabbing me and asking for pictures. And I'm like, no, where'd this fucking guy go? And, you know, they don't know what I'm saying.
They just, like, his mind is like, woohoo, look at him.
Yeah. And so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll just take some pictures. You know? but here, my friend was there that, like I said, lived right down the street. And he speaks just a little bit of English. And he said, Matt, what happened? I said, man, you know, Bachi fucking punched me and ran away. And he says, okay, I get him. And then you go on YouTube, you see what happened.
Holy shit. I'm gonna put, so whoever's watching this on YouTube right now, the link is gonna pop up here somewhere. So if you're listening on Spotify, just go on the description. I'll put the link there so we can all watch. Let's go to the UFC 206 with Donald Cerrone.
Yeah.
Was there any animosity between you guys? Do I remember something going on?
You know what? I give it to Donald. I was trying to make some animosity, but I didn't actually have any animosity. And I blame myself for that. That was kind of a dumb thing on my part. But everybody was telling, I kind of let people get in my head a little bit, you know, and everybody was telling me, yeah, you got to get in his head. You got to talk shit to him. That's how you beat him, you know? So I kind of tried to a little bit, but that's, I learned my lesson right there. Like, it's not natural. That's not me. That's not who I am.
And he kind of can feel that too, right? Because everybody tried to do that after the Nick Diaz fight, the Nate Diaz fight.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, the Nate Diaz fight. It's like, oh, that's his kryptonite. Yeah. So getting his head, his head kind of thing. But if it's not natural, it doesn't have the same effect, right?
No, it's not me, man. And I wish I'd never even fucked with it, but I let other people influence me on that. But, you know, I thought we had a great fight, man, you know. Unfortunately, I made one mistake and he capitalized on it right away and knocked the fuck out of me. It's the only time I've been knocked out in my life, you know, more power to him. That's one I've always wanted to get back because I absolutely feel like I should have won that fight. You know, and I could tell a million reasons about it, but, it is what it is, man. Just one of those I'd love to get back. But much respect to Donald, man. You know, he had a good game plan, fought me the right way, stayed out of my clinch, stayed away from my elbows, didn't get too close to me, kept a good distance, and threw me off a little bit. But, you know, Donald's a cool guy, actually, man, you know, and I'd love to run it back someday, but
that would be awesome. Yeah. That would be an awesome fight to watch.
Yeah.
The one I was trying to, like, when you said that, I was trying to that Jake Ellenberger fight was the one he kicked you in the body and you kind of like go back, right? And like okay.
Yeah, and it was an early stoppage. I was just recovering from the body shot and he threw some shots that didn't even touch me and then
I remember that. Yeah. What goes in with your body? Is it does it fucking shut? Because it's not something common to see, like, especially with you, right? Like you kind of like literally like, oh shit.
Yeah, I mean it hurts, you know. Like I've never felt like my body shut down or anything. And that particular one, like he got me good. It was more in the stomach.
He was right, like on the liver kind of thing, right?
It was actually more in the stomach than the liver, you know. Okay. So. You know, just kind of hurt my belly. I was just relaxed and I hadn't really warmed. I was just getting kind of warmed up in the fight. And I think if I learned something from that fight, it was, you know, to warm up better in the back and be more prepared. And, you know, I was just kind of just getting warmed up. And, you know, he had another guy kind of threw me off. You know, he came out guns a-blazing straight away. And I wasn't expecting that out of him at all. And, you know, more power to him. You know, it's good for him. But, you know, I was hurt, you know, to the body and I needed to recover for a minute. And so I just, you know, curled up to recover and I didn't hear the referee say anything like, you know, you got to move or anything like that.
They'll just come for your reaction, actually, right? Like, it's like, oh, all right, this fight's over. It was like, what the fuck? Just let it run? Yeah.
Yeah, I wish that they would have given me more credit knowing, like, I've been through some fucking wars. Like, I can come back from this, you know. Like, it's just gonna take a second. Like, let me just catch my breath and get back to it. But, you know, the referee is a tough job, so I try not to diss them too much. But
I agree.
You know, it's a tough job, so they're gonna make some mistakes. It's just unfortunate their mistakes can really affect a motherfucker's paycheck.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with that too. Especially in that case, it's something kind of like not easy, but it's kind of like something not as hard to analyze. Well, if you're talking like a tough decision that the judges give it to someone, unless it's something like brutal, I always understand because they say, look, if we're watching again to see who won, that's it. It's like the guy's not wrong.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's like we have the privilege to be able to come back and watch. It's like, oh, he won that fight. So the guy had to make the decision in 1 minute. So
absolutely. Yeah. So I try not to be a hater on judges or referees. Sometimes the judges are completely way the fuck off.
Oh, like, no. That's why I say, like, not always, but it's Well, then we're gonna talk about that. I think it's the highlight of any elbow knockout ever. That's your Diego Sanchez fight, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was yeah, but I mean, look, man, Diego, He should have stayed at 45 or 55. He doesn't need to be fighting welterweights.
Yeah.
I'm proud of, you know, having a great elbow highlight and everything. But the fact is, Diego, man, he's a fucking 45 or 55.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
I don't take too much pride in it, you know, other than the fact that it was a really good highlight. And, Diego kind of, sometimes I must even feel bad, man. He hooked up with that Fabian guy right after he lost his fucking mind.
Holy shit, that was a fucking mess.
I'm like, man, did I do that to Diego? But you know what, man? He also just got me on the wrong time, the wrong place, man. I was feeling great at that time. I was full of rage after my last few performances. And I just trained my fucking balls off and was ready to kill somebody, man. And he was just on the wrong end of the stick on that one. And
It is what it is. You got another bonus there, performance of the night. Then we got the win against Ben Saunders, and then you back, right? Like, was there a time in there? I'm trying to see the timing here. There's a big break between 2017, well, November 17 and then December 19. That's a couple of years. Is that like you say, hey, that was my last fight after the Diego fight kind of thing? You took a break and say, hey, I'm done. This is it. And then it's like, fuck it, I'm back.
Yeah, man, I planned on retiring. Well, I was supposed to fight, a couple months after Diego, and I tore my ACL. And at that point, I was just really drained from training so hard all the time. And, I mean, we went through a lot of my fights, and you see, I had a pretty hefty schedule and fought some real savages. And it didn't feel like I was performing to the level that I wanted to perform at. And then finally I tore my ACL and I was like, man, maybe this would be it for me. That's when I opened my gym. And so at that point, but it didn't take long, man. It didn't take long. My ACL healed up real quick. I felt real good. And as soon as my ACL started feeling good again, I was hungry, ready to go back in, man.
Exactly. And especially, like, I think you were a kind of, like, down-to-earth guy that you're still competing in a high level. It's not like that kind of, like, veteran that gets to that, like, it's like, oh, shit. Like Diego, we were just talking about. It's like, this guy should not be fucking, you know, we respect the guy and everything, but he wants to compete in a high level. He has a name. They're just not going to fucking throw him with a guy that's just coming up. And it's just how the game is. So,
well, they will.
Well, the coming up, I mean, like a guy with very little experience and throw that's kind of what I'm trying. Like they're going to try to make him a step up for whoever he's fighting, you know, and that's brutal because, like I said, like the guy there is trying to rip your head off. So if you're not in that level anymore, you need to recognize. Just like we just saw with Anderson, right? Like that fight with Uriah Hall, that was fuck. You look at the guy, he's fighting great. He's just 2 seconds lower than Uriah on everything.
Sure.
And that's all. He's moving well, but he's just like a little slower. In that level, it costs him a lot. So
yeah, it's unfortunate. It happens to the best of us, man.
Exactly. Then it's the one before your latest fight, the one with Carlos Condit, and I'm gonna bring it. That's one of my all time favorite fighters. And so are you. I guess we get a little older. Like I remember like the great nights of fighting. I remember you fighting. I remember Carlos Condit fighting. I remember Nate and Nick and now like I watch a lot because of the show and we do like a news episode on every Monday. So I have to watch so I can talk about it. But it's like when I see you there, it's just like You know, it brings us that good feeling that's like, oh shit, let's go, and it's gonna be a good fight too. So, how was it? I was broken hearted. I couldn't pick a winner for that fight. And how was it? How was it for you with that fight?
Well, like you said before, man, I thought I won the fight. Unfortunately, they gave it to him. But it was close, man. Like, we're very similar skill sets, very similar levels. You know, and I felt that way through the whole fight, man. I felt like wow, like, we're really close on everything here. And it threw me off a little bit. Like, I had the fight before that I lost to Beza where with the corona where there was no crowd, you know. And yeah. That shit, I don't really like that stuff, man. I feel like I finally got used to it in my last fight. For whatever reason, it just throws me off a little bit, man. But I feel like I finally got more comfortable with it in my last fight and was able to kind of put that stuff to the side. But, yeah, I mean, I respect Carlos, man. I'm so happy that we finally got to fight. And I'd love to do it again with him someday, man.
Like, that would be an awesome fight, too. That would be an awesome one to redo it, too, for sure. For sure. And then we'll roll back to last month. Oh no, shit, we're in August already. So we'll go back to June 19. You fought Diego Lima. Everybody in Brazil knows him mostly because of his brother, Douglas, right? The not anymore either, but he was the Bellator champ. And you got performance of the night. That was a beautiful fight too, man.
Yeah, me and Diego actually go back a long way, man. Of course, I fought his brother a long time ago, and
I think it was like right at the beginning of your career. You fought Douglas, right?
I was a young pro.
Yeah, in 2007.
Yeah, and he was sort of the prodigal child back then, right? I didn't even know. I mean, I took the fight. I don't remember how long, but they basically brought me down to Atlanta. And I had no idea that I was the main event. I had no idea who Douglas Lima was. And I kind of get down there and everybody's like, oh, you're the one fighting Douglas? Oh.
Oh, that's great to hear, right?
Like, good luck, buddy. Holy you know, shit. And I'm like, well, who the fuck is this guy? Like, why is everybody talking like this? You know? And ended up fighting him. And, you know, that guy, he kicked my legs harder than anybody's ever kicked my legs in my life. I remember I couldn't walk for 2 weeks after that fight, man.
Oh, wow.
That was brutal. And apparently Diego kicks pretty hard too. You know, my leg wasn't feeling too good after that either.
Really?
But, you know, but you know, me and Diego, sorry, I got another call there. Right. You know, me and Diego go way back then. I was coaching on the Ultimate Fighter with TJ Dillashaw, which Diego was on there. I trained with them a little bit on there, so that was pretty cool. And then I coached Jesse Taylor in the finals against Diego.
Uh-huh.
So I had already studied Diego. I had replicated Diego. I fought his brother. You know, so it felt like a long history. And
I see. And it was very, very familiar, right?
Very familiar. And me and Diego were very cool. I think he's a great guy, a very cool person. And a great fighter. I think he's probably better than he showed when I fought him. Like, I knew him so well and just kind of had his number. And
that happens too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That happens. And for me, I mean, I just felt on that night too. I don't think anybody would have beat me that night. I just felt on. I just felt sharp and everything felt great and all the pieces fell into place for camp. So
that's awesome. How's your contract with the UFC? How many fights you still have? We're talking renewal. We're gonna do this for a few more years. What are you feeling right now? Like I just said, like you've been doing pretty damn good. So it's like, and you love to fight too. So what's in your mind?
To be honest, I don't even know what my contract is. Yeah, I probably should. I know what they pay me. Every single time that I've had a contract renewal, they've given me a raise, whether I was coming off a win or a loss. They give me a significant raise every time. And I really don't even discuss it with them. I don't have a manager or anything.
Oh.
So I don't even mess with that. Like, I just call Sean or Dana myself and
give me a fight.
Yeah, just say, hey, I'm ready to fight. And they get me a fight. I just never been that guy, man. Like, I love fighting. And I'm just so happy and feel blessed to be able to live this lifestyle that I live. And
that's awesome.
You know, maybe I could make more money if I was doing differently or whatever. But I live a great lifestyle, and I'm happy with where I'm at. And the way I'm feeling right now, I might have another 5-6 years left. Obviously, a lot could change in 5 or 6 years. So,
oh, yeah.
So we'll take it fight by fight, and we'll go till the wheels fall off.
Nice. We're looking for another fight this year too, right?
Maybe. It might take until next year.
Okay.
Still, I'm actually still injured from the Diego fight. I'm literally I broke my toe before the fight.
Oof.
And it had almost healed up, and then I broke it again during the fight. So
yeah.
I'm actually just now able to push off on it again. So we'll just see how that goes up.
Yeah, I might have to take a break then. And then coming back, do you ask for it, or is like, hey, give me this guy, give me that guy? Because like I said, like we have some great rematches or some nice surprises to see with you. Is there anyone you have in mind? Everybody asks that, but I'm just curious here. It's like, it's not like the journalistic way to finish, but I'm curious, like, who the fuck you want to fight next? Because I love to watch.
The Cowboy rematch is appealing. I don't think he's going to fight at 170 anymore, though.
Mm.
Maybe he would to rematch me. I don't know. First things first, I don't like asking for rematches. I don't like when people ask for rematches. You get your 15 minutes, and if you don't get it done in that time, then you didn't deserve the rematch. You know, I think the time and place for rematches is when you're either fighting for a title and they've earned their way back to a title, or when it's maybe a bullshit fight or a bullshit loss that clearly judges shouldn't have given to, or there's certain situations. But when someone beats you, they beat you and you move on. So I don't like asking for rematches. But with that said, I would just be excited.
It would be an awesome fight, exactly.
Yeah, I would just love to do it. And I would approach it a little differently. And like I said, I respect Cowboy. And that would be my first pick if I had the choice. I also mentioned before fighting Damian Maia for his retirement fight, which would be a great honor for me. He made a post about it and pretty much turned it down already. So, that probably won't happen. But.
Plus, I think he was looking to do that last fight in Brazil, and that's not going to happen for a while because it's...
Yeah, that's going to be a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have anybody really particularly in mind. I never really have called people out or anything. I just, they call me and I say, okay, let's go.
That's awesome. Hey, where can we buy your coffee?
TheImmortalCoffee.com.
TheImmortalCoffee.com. So the link is going to be on the description of the YouTube video. I'll put a link on the Spotify link. I'm not sure if people can click on it though, but theimmortalcoffee.com. We'll have it on the screen. I'm buying mine. And nice. Matt, thank you so much for your time. We way way over than I gonna say it was. But it was an awesome. But it was very 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 fun. So I'm gonna take my time and caption all of these, and I'll shoot you a message when it goes live with links and stuff like that. We'll post. We'll stay in touch. Anything I can do for you in the show, count me in. Whatever you need to promote, let me know. I'll be glad. I'll be happy to help.
Thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day, man.
Yeah, you too, brother. Thank you.